Thanks for joining us for another awesome message from C3 Church Toronto. Our heart is that these podcasts would be a tool that helps you connect to God. If you need more info on our church, check out our website at www.c3toronto.com. Now grab a coffee and prepare your heart for a powerful word from God.
We are in a series called Majesty. This is actually Pastor Sam and my first week of preaching Majesty. So we've had the privilege of having the campus pastors preach a couple of them, and even Michaela, which I think she's in the back somewhere at the moment. And we really wanted to, we've been just blown away by the magnificence of God and how easily we can try and bring him down to our own revelation. And so we really wanted to preach this message to just blow our minds again with just how incredible God is and how big he is and how grand he is, and just remind ourselves of that. I did want to quickly shout out Men's Brekkie, because I think that it was amazing. And we've talked about it a lot today, but we need to talk about it. And I think, do you have a photo, maybe of my son? Is there a photo, one of the photos of my son up there? Maybe from Men's Brekkie? Maybe. There it is. So for me, for me, this is a beautiful moment. This was his first time of getting to go out with the men and do manly men stuff. And he was so excited, and he came back and couldn't stop talking about it. And I wanted to say just how incredibly proud of the men I am in this church. And there, I was sharing it a little bit last week when I was telling you to get to Men's Brekkie, but there is this fire, there is this fight that is in the men and the women in this church, and it's just starting. It's like starting to get kind of ignited inside of us. And when Sam and myself were kind of thinking about what do we want these men's and women's ministries to look like, we almost got, well, we didn't almost, we got this picture of kind of like the Vikings. Like, it's raw, it's fight, it's purpose. We're fighting for something. We're not just fighting for the sake of it. We're fighting alongside each other. If anyone's ever watched the show, I'm not going to say that I do or don't from stage, but if you've watched it, you'll see that the men and the women are fighting alongside each other right there on the front line. And I think for some reason, for too long, the women have been standing up and not the men. And I am proud that this church is filled with men and women that aren't fighting each other. They're fighting with each other, fighting alongside, and we're actually making a change and a difference. And I am proud that my son gets to grow up under that, that what we are building right now is going to become his normal. Something that we are dreaming for is going to become normal to him. And that's the goal for this next generation. I'm just so, so proud of the men in this church. Warriors. And they're all growing these manly beards too. Flippin' love it. Can I be proud of the men? Is that okay? Am I allowed to be? I love this masculinity that is coming up. I love the manly beards. It's great. Do it. Be a man. It's good. Anyway, majesty. Majesty. So, God is big. He is grand. And I think we do have this, this ability as human beings to try and make sense of it all and try and understand it all. But the whole point of God is that we can't actually understand him. We can't make sense of it all. And so when we try and make sense of it all, we actually diminish the level of power that he has in our lives. And so as I was preparing for this message, I was like, God, what is the scriptures that really speak about how great you are, how incredible you are? And I was drawn to Isaiah 40. I'm going to get you to turn there. It's the whole chapter, but don't worry, I'm not going to read the whole thing out to you. I'm just going to draw a couple of pieces out. But I do advise you, in your own time, go through Isaiah 40. Pastor Sam is preaching on Hebrews this morning and how much it is blowing his world. Isaiah 40 at the moment for me has been blowing my mind. It has been sensational. There is so much gold in such a short, well, it's not that short of a chapter, but in one chapter, there is so much gold that will benefit your life and benefit our perspectives on who God is. And it starts with this. In the very beginning, it starts with comfort, comfort my people. I love that it starts with comfort, that it starts with God knowing that our lives are crazy, that our lives are exhausting, that they're overwhelming, that we feel like we want to give up. The very beginning line is comfort, comfort my people. He gets it. And I my dad is an incredible, incredible man, and I have so much respect for him. And growing up, he would, whenever he would get sick, I would notice that he would drink a lot of milk. And I noticed it probably, probably from about the age of like 6 or 7 when you kind of start to become aware of this sort of stuff. And I just, like, we were big milk drinkers in our family, so I thought he just really loved milk. And that was like his comfort thing when he would get sick. And I noticed it, that his milk uptake would go higher every time he would get sick, which I thought was a little bit strange. But, you know, you're kids, so you're like, well, your parents know best. And then I remember bringing it up to him, probably as like about 16 or 17 at this point. I remember asking him, Dad, why do you drink milk when you get sick? Like, for me, drinking milk when I get sick just makes it even worse. Like, I just feel even more gross and just yuck. And he said to me, well, you got to really load up on that vitamin C when you're sick. I was like, oh, what? Yeah, of course you need to load up on that vitamin C when you're sick, like in oranges and orange juice, and you get the echinacea in you and all that kind of stuff. And he's like, yeah, just like in milk. I'm like, no, Dad, there's not vitamin C in milk. I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, yeah, vitamin C is short for calcium. I'm like, what? How do you not know that those two things are completely different? You're a grown man. You are intelligent. You run businesses, and you don't know that calcium and vitamin C are not the same thing. You have been drinking milk when you get sick for how long? He's like, as long as I can remember. So he has older sisters, so I bet his older sisters like just told him when he was young, this is the way. And he just thought that that was the case. This sounds like unbelievable, but trust me, ask my dad and it's actually the truth. Poor guy got a revelation from his 16-year-old daughter. But I think that this is exactly what we're like with God. And this scripture talks about it. It says, do you not know? It says it about 3 or 4 times through there. Do you not know? Have you not been told? Have you not heard? Do you not know how great God is? And my poor dad had no idea that what he was doing was actually making himself feel worse. It sounds like a ridiculous comparison, but we do it. Someone's told us something about God and we've believed that instead of believing what the word says. Do you not know how great he is? Do you not know how much he cares for you? Do you not know? How can you not believe it? Have you not heard? Or we've thought that we do kind of understand it, but we've brought it down to our own perspective. But trust me, he is big, he is grand, and he has good things in store for you. So my title today is called, Do You Not Know? I think is what I actually called it in the end. Do you not know? And so what I want to do today is I want to kind of help our minds think bigger again. Actually know God. Get a clear revelation, a new idea of who he truly is. Hopefully I can expel some of those lies that you've believed. Hopefully you're not like my dad and you don't think that calcium and vitamin C are the same thing. But there may be lies right here in this room that you believe about God that are not true. And so I'm going to try and do my best today to help you with that. So Isaiah 40, where it starts with comfort, comfort my people, speak tenderly to Jerusalem. And proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for. That's what I'm hoping to do today. Speak to you tenderly. It may at times feel like a mum's slap on the hand a little bit, but trust me, it's from a heart of speaking to you tenderly that your sins are paid for. And if you don't know that, you know that now. They're not going to be paid for. They have been paid for. And that he has great things in store for you. And then the rest of the scripture, it goes on. It's a prophetic chapter. And in verse 3, it says, a voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. It's all about how Jesus is coming to save the day, basically. But I love in verse 6, it says, a voice says, cry out. And I said, what shall I cry? And this is what we do in our lives. What shall we cry? And I love this because I think that perhaps God would say, tell the people that they're mighty. Tell the people that they've got what it takes. Tell the people that they're strong. But do you know what he says? He says, what shall I cry out? All the people are like grass. All the people are like grass. So this is God saying, this is my word for my people. You're like grass. I was like, okay. Does that mean that like I'm durable? I look good on a meadow, or I don't know. What does that mean? And then it keeps going, and their faithfulness is like the flowers of the field. Ah. So when I'm faithful, I'm this beautiful flower in the field, and what a beautiful picture that you're painting, Jesus. And then the next verse, the grass withers and the flowers fall because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Then again, surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of God endures forever. It says it twice. So his word to us, which is my first point, is that we're just grass. We're just grass. There's a lot of self-help out there that will tell you that you're great, that you're mighty, that you got what it takes. But we don't. We don't. We're just grass. We're here one day, and then we're brown the next, dying. Our flowers, it's just so beautiful. We're just so faithful to Jesus, and the flower blooms. It's there for like a week or two, and then it dies in this perspective of things. But the word of the Lord endures forever. I love that the beginning of this is he's actually reminding us of just how weak we are. Now, this could sound like a really depressing thought, but the truth is that we can't do this life without Jesus. And for some reason, we've believed this lie that we've got what it takes. And then we try and step out in our own strength and we end up discouraged. And we end up feeling let down and we wonder why and we cry out to God, why? But it's because we're trying to do it in our own strength. It's because we're trying to believe that we're high and mighty and that we have what it takes. But we're just grass. We're just grass. We need something to water us. We need something to tend to us. We need something to care for us. We're not that great. I sometimes have these moments where I feel like I have it all together. And I don't know if you're the same as me. Or maybe I'm just going to let you in on a little side of me, but no, you're great. You don't ever feel like this. Some mornings I feel like, okay, I got this day. I am nailing this. The kids are happy. They're fed. They've got their clothes on, which for a mum in this room knows that that's a win. Sometimes that takes about 100. Please get your clothes on. Please, what did I ask you to do? Did I ask you to get your clothes on? Can you please get your clothes on? Can you please put your clothes on? How come you still don't have clothes on? How come you're naked now? Can you put your clothes on, please? That is my morning normally. So the kids were fed, clothes on, ready to leave the door. I'm like, good, we're going to get to school on time. I don't have to do the mum walk of shame, which is the walk to the office where you have to get the late slip, which happens to me all the time. And we get there and we drop Noah off and I'm like, buddy, where's your jacket? And he's like, I don't know. Well, and then I turn to Sam, I'm like, Sam, where's his jacket? He's like, I don't know where his jacket is. You always grab his jacket. And I realized I had dropped my kid off without his jacket on a really cold day. And I was like, okay, great. Well, yeah, I don't have it all together. My son is now at school in, you know, 1 degree weather without a jacket. It's okay, I can go home and get it. And then we're walking into class and I'm handing everything over to the teacher and the teacher's like, where's his backpack? Forgot that one too. Forgot the backpack too. I remembered to make his lunch though, but it's still in the backpack at home. And so I had this real, it sounds so cheesy, but I had this moment of realization that I really am in lack a lot of the time. But the thing that was highlighted to me was how much I wanted to not be in lack. How much I was so proud of myself and striving in the morning and feeling great about myself that I had it all together. And how quickly I was reminded that I don't. And we feel like this in every area of our life. We want to like get it all together because we hate that feeling of being in lack. Am I right? Am I the only one that feels this? We want to try and, you know, discipline ourselves enough. We want to work out enough and we want to self-improve enough and read books and we want to get all of our lack out of the way and feel complete enough. But we won't ever without Jesus. We won't. We're actually supposed to be in lack. I love in 2 Corinthians 12:9, it says, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me.'" My power is made perfect in weakness. There is this thing in us that is striving for perfection, and that's actually a good thing. But we can't find perfection on our own. But we are actually meant to be perfect. Our perfection is actually found when his power rests on us. And his power rests on us in weakness. And so therefore, this strive for perfection actually should just be recognizing that we're just grass, recognizing that we're weak, and drawing on his power. And therefore, we're made perfect. It's like a flip the script kind of thing. We don't have to get all of our ducks in a row and fix all of our own lack. We just have to recognize we're in lack and be in Jesus. It's simple, right? It sounds too simple to be true, but it's true. So the good news is that God doesn't expect you to be perfect. He doesn't expect you to have it all together. He completely understands, as you can read in this word, that we don't. That we're not meant to, and that he wants us to depend on him. That's great news. It's great news for me. I hope it's great news for you guys too. So hopefully I can help shift your mind a little bit from this idea of believing in yourself and flipping the script to believing in Jesus, to believing in God. There's nothing wrong with believing in yourself, but it will have an end to it. Because we are weak beings at the core of us, and weakness trying to draw strength from weakness just doesn't make sense. It doesn't. We can't go deep enough into our being to draw out strength because we're weak. And so God doesn't want us to be perfect. You don't have this, but God's got this. And I've been trying to change my vocabulary to that. The amount of times that I encourage people, "You've got this. You've got what it takes. You're amazing." No, I've got to start to switch it because it starts to get people depending on themselves and their own strengths. And unfortunately, that's what our generation has done. We've tried to tell ourselves that we've got what it takes. You see it all over Instagram. It's a complete lie. And I don't want you to believe it in this place because you will only be disappointed when you're not able to do what you were hoping you were wanting to do in your own strength. And I don't want you disappointed. I want you dependent on Jesus. So do you not know that you are just grass? We all are. We're just grass. And we're okay with that. And we're depending on Jesus. My second point is that he is majesty. This whole chapter, basically when you read through it, it kind of keeps flip-flopping. It keeps telling us how much we suck and how great God is. And oh, just to remind you again, you're nothing, but God's great. Oh, just to remind you again, you're gonna fail, but God's great. And people could read this and they sometimes make this disassociation where they think that God is up in heaven and telling us that we're bad people from telling us that we don't have it together. But the truth is he's actually empathizing with us. He's actually empathizing with our situations and empathizing with our weaknesses and saying, "Oh my goodness, I know what you're going through. I just recognize it because you can't get out of it on your own because I want to come and help you get out of it." And he is majesty. So I want to just go through a little bit. I won't have much time, but go through this during the week. But I want to go through a couple of the statements that it says about how great God is. Because can I tell you something? We speak a lot about Jesus. Jesus is incredible. But I fear that our generation has turned Jesus into a philanthropic, great guy. And he is not. He is not a good guy. He is not a great guy. He is the Son of God. He's not just some incredible human being that did great charity work. He's actually the Son of God. And we need to keep remembering that, and we need to keep putting our perspective in that direction. So in verse 12, I'm just going to run through these. In verse 12, it says, "Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and hills in a balance?" He has such greatness and such knowledge to even know what a mountain weighs. He knows every single intricate part of this earth, of you, of the heavens, of the universe, and he's great. Verse 13, "Who can fathom the Spirit of the Lord?" He is unfathomable. Our brains and our minds cannot even understand how great he is. "Who can fathom the Spirit of the Lord, or instruct the Lord as his counselor?" I try and do that all the time, but we can't. We can't tell him which way we should be going. "Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, and who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? No one. He is the ultimate God of wisdom." He is ultimately wisdom. Verse 17, "Before him all the nations are as nothing." There's that one of those depressing sounds again. "All of the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. So then with whom will you compare God to? What image will you liken him to?" We actually can't liken him to anything, because everything that we see as grand or as big or as amazing is actually in perspective nothing. That's a crazy thought. It's such a crazy thought. His perspective is so much bigger than ours and so incomparable. It makes our problems seem like nothing. It's incredible. Verse 21, "Do you not know? Have you not heard?" There's that "do you not know" again. "Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood this since the earth was founded?" He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth and its people like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. I love this picture. He is king. He sits on a throne. Do you know, side note of this, when this was written, they actually didn't know that the earth was round. So prophetically speaking, talking about the earth being a circle is actually pretty incredible. Just a side note. The Bible is amazing, amazing stuff. And I think as science starts to catch up, we're going to learn more and more and more about how much of this is actually truth, not the other way around. So he is king, but I love that he is not king that he sits there and points down at us. He's king, and he's actually sitting there stretching out the heavens. He is stretching out the home for us, spreads them out like tents to live in. He is looking after our home and our dwelling. He has, verse 23, "He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing." There's good news for some nations at the moment. "No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, that he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them up like chaff." He has the ultimate authority. There is not one authority on this earth that does not come under his authority. He has the ultimate authority. It may seem like some authorities in your life, maybe your boss, maybe your parents, I don't know what that is, may seem like they have authority, but ultimately, God has the authority in this world. Verse 26, "Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all of these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls forth each of them by name because of his great power and mighty strength. Not one of them is missing. If he can name the stars and not forget one of their names, he knows you, and he knows everything about you, and he will not forget you, and you are not missing. You are not missing from his sight. He is creator, and he knows everything that he has created. Verse 27, "Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God?" He cares about every little thing, every little part of our lives. And in 28, it says, "Do you not know?" There it is again. It's like this whole chapter is just trying to tell us, do you not know? Are you hearing me?
Are you hearing me? How great he is. Do you not know again? Let me tell you again. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God. Everlasting. Nothing else is everlasting, but God is the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He is the sovereign Lord. He is the everlasting King. He is the King of kings, and he sits on that throne. And we cannot even understand him, even if we try. And we cannot put him in his rightful place. I actually really don't like that saying, because he actually, we don't have the ability to tell him whether he can be on the throne or not. He actually is on the throne. We just have the ability to either acknowledge that or pretend like it's not really happening. But the truth is he's on the throne no matter what. And we can actually have relationship with a king. He's on the throne. It's amazing. And so my last point, I'm just going to invite the keys back up, is so we're just grass. We know that now. But let it not be a depressing thought. And he is king. He is majesty. He is unfathomable greatness. But yet, he joins the two things together. So too often we try and separate them. And we think, well, then I'm just nothing and God doesn't want anything to do with me. False. Or we try and close the gap and we try and make ourselves great and try and get closer to God. But that's also false, because we could never measure up to him. But what he does is he sent Jesus to actually create relationship between the two, so that his everlasting, incredible, amazing, this King in heaven is actually real and tangible to us in our lives that seem almost insignificant. In verse 29, it says, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. And you may know some of these verses. These are the famous verses of Isaiah 40. Husband has an eagle tattooed right here on his wonderful bicep. And it's from this verse. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. And that verse has so much power and so much authority to it. But when you read all of the verses before, you realize just how much authority and power it has to it. That this is the incredible God who created the heavens and the earth, that he wants to scoop you up and let you soar on wings like eagles. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. But it's those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. It's not those who practice self-care. I'm going to get a little bit cheeky here. It might help, but it won't renew their strength. Not those that have me time or live a balanced lifestyle. That's not going to renew your strength. It's not. Not those who have set up boundaries to protect themselves. The people who renew their strength are those who put their hope in the Lord. It is the only way that our strength is renewed. And I know that there are tired people in here, that there are weary people in here, because I get like it every day. Every day I feel like I don't know if I can do another day of this. Life is exhausting. Life gets chaotic. Life is overwhelming. But we can't fix it in our own strength. And I get so passionate about this because our generation is trying to find strength. We are trying to find strength, and we can't seem to find that strength that actually renews us, that actually enables us to feel like we are soaring on wings as eagles. And it's because we're looking in all the wrong places. There's nothing wrong with all that other stuff. I know I was being cheeky. Yes, do practice self-care. Do all of that. Have boundaries. But don't make it the answer. It is not the answer. Jesus is the answer. His majesty is the answer. It's the only thing. Who is your God? Do you know? much he loves you, how much he cares about you, how much you are not missing in his eyes, how much he wants to swoop you up and let you soar wings as eagles. The only way you're going to do that is by putting your hope in him. But we can, because we've just read about how much he cares, how much authority he has, how little our problems seem in comparison to his majesty. And so with every head bow and every eye closed right now, I'm just going to give you an opportunity. If you need that strength, if you need that rest, he will meet you right there. And I want to give you the opportunity to invite him into your heart to begin journeying with him. And so if you are in this room right now and you want to begin that walk with Jesus, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand in a second. And if you have walked with him in the past and you just want to come back, that's great too. And I'm going to invite you to raise your hand as well. And then what we're going to do is we're just going to do a prayer together, and it's as simple as that. So if that is you right now, if you want to begin that walk with Jesus, there's already a hand up that I don't even need to say. Just put your hand up.